Thank you. Thank you very much. I've been sitting down there trying to calculate, am I taller than the lectern? No. just barely. I'll stand here. This is my very first time at a convention of Alcoholics Anonymous conducted in English. I have been to several in Italy over the years, but I haven't been for a very long time, and I don't know that I've ever spoken to this many people for any purpose whatsoever. So my stomach is right. I'm cognizant of the desire to not hear long drunkologues and to focus on recovery, but if I want anybody to identify with me, I'm going to have a little bit of my story here. My descent, or whatever you want to call it, into alcoholism is very much messed up with sex. Now I have everyone's attention. And so my story and the places that it took me and the problems that it caused me, sometimes it's difficult to tease apart which parts were the alcohol and the other substances and which parts were sex and love addiction or serial monogamy or adultery or... it's difficult, but suffice it to say that all of that, for good or bad, brought me to the place I am today. And the presence of alcohol, one way or the other, and all of the rest of it, it took me in weird directions. Today, I can be grateful. I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. But let's be honest. I mean, there were things that I would do differently if I possibly could. So my story is not a long one. I drank and used for 12 years. And in that time, I managed to have a marriage, a divorce, crash a lot of cars, be gang raped, have double-digit abortions, drop out of a prestigious university, go back to it, finish school, be declared, briefly, be declared dead from alcohol poisoning one fine evening at university. My vital signs had gone so low as a result of how much I had taken in. I was really on a fast track to nowhere good. There was, if I'm honest, there was a person inside of me that knew that it didn't have to be this way, or it wasn't meant to be this way, or that my parents didn't raise me to be this way. Oh, did I mention prostitution? I think I left that out. Yeah. I was now, with many years of time to have reflected on it, and with a lot more reading and meetings and listening to other people's shares, I've had a lot of time to think about what was it, you know, what was it that caused me to go off the rails like that? And I think now that I have a teenage girl of my own, I think that the process of forming an identity at the age of 12, 13, 14, 15 is so, so challenging. And probably it's becoming more and more difficult as our world changes and the ways that we interact with each other or don't interact with each other change. But all of that doesn't really matter, because my story was what it was. I should mention that when I was that age, I was handed an additional challenge, and that was that my mother and then a doctor discovered that I had a quite severe spine curvature. And they brought me to the hospital, and I was in the hospital for days of testing, and they were trying to determine what what therapy to use, whether to break my back and put me in a cast or to try a brace. And I was really praying for the break my back and put me in a cast and lie in bed for 1 year and not go to school. That was what I wanted. But I didn't get that. They found that my spine was still dynamic enough or still flexible enough that it might respond to the brace. So for the next 3 years, I wore 23 hours a day this monstrous thing that went from here to here. There was a big collar up around my chin and a big metal upright here, two in the back, and a hard plastic case around my hips. And so that was how I did high school. And yeah, maybe, you know, there was some pent-up sexual thing by the time that was over. And I was really, I really wanted to get out there and party and have boyfriends, because all during those years, all I did was go to school and race home. I was just so mortified to be seen in that condition. I couldn't wear cool clothes. I had to, my mother sewed everything that I wore so that it would fit over this thing. So yeah, I was kind of at that point primed for trouble. And I got it. I was kind of like going through life in fits and starts. The person in me who was full of potential, who was intelligent, who had good parents and a good upbringing, that person would step forward every once in a while. And then sex and drugs and rock and roll would suck me back into this vortex, and I would mess up and lose things and break things and spoil relationships. And it went back and forth like that for quite a long time. Here's a highlight. When I was 16, I had the opportunity to go to a place some of you might remember called the Soviet Union. I went with a study group of about 30 other kids from all over my country, the U.S. I'm from Massachusetts. And while I was there, I visited places that most people even today have never seen. We were in Stalingrad and on Lake Baikal and looking at the hydroelectric dam in Bratsk. And it was an amazing opportunity. And guess how much of it I remember? Almost nothing. I was drunk or hungover or asleep or in bed with someone the whole time. And I remember the first big night of drinking. It was a place that didn't have any limits on alcohol consumption, and it didn't matter how old you were, and that was just too exciting for me. I just couldn't stop myself, and everybody else was drinking too. And I remember that was the first night I drank like that, with no holds barred. I had my first blackout, and I was very often after that a blackout drinker. I remember waking up, I was in Kiev, I was covered with bruises, I didn't know where they had come from. I had to try to piece it together by asking some of the other kids, where were we, what did we do? Apparently we had been all over the city, up and down, in hotels and bars and everywhere. And I just had no memory of it. And it didn't scare me. It didn't scare me. It intrigued me. So I talked a little before about this person who was good and who appreciated honesty and those New England values, hard work and merit. And so in one of those brief moments, I managed to get a job as a journalist in southeastern Massachusetts. And I was quickly moved from being a journalist to being an editor to being a general manager of operations. And somewhere in there, one of those, that series of promotions, It was starting to get serious. Like, they were expecting things of me, and I had people under me reporting to me, and I was, let's see, 27 or, no, 25, 6, 7, something like that. And they were grown-ups, you know. These were people with families, and they were reporting to me. And I was showing up at work with inappropriate clothing and no bra and drinking at my lunch break, and it was a mess. And so, but we were working at a kind of remote location, and from what the management could see at headquarters, things were going well. I was a promising young manager, so they promoted me again. And then I started to get scared. Like, how long can my luck hold? So I decided to take a week off before starting the new position and detox. I had this idea that I would detox and I would start this new job with a clear head and with all my wits about me and all my energy. But then I drank on the first day of my week off. And okay, well, I'll start tomorrow. And I drank the next day and the next day. And I drank all through the week up until Sunday night, the day before starting the new job. So I went that day, and the first order of business, the company was having a big gathering of mid-level managers for different educational things. We had various speakers. It was in a hotel, not unlike this. And I remember the function room, and there were a lot of round tables. And I was seated next to another manager. His name was Roger. And for some reason, Roger had shared with me in the past that he was a sober alcoholic. And I had known other sober alcoholics here and there over the years. And I had even been to meetings, but I went kind of as a tourist, you know, or as a journalist or an anthropologist, somebody who was interested in this phenomenon of Alcoholics Anonymous. Didn't have anything to do with me, of course. So anyway, at this management training session, one of the speakers came, and she was a lady from the local alcoholism council or service, some kind of semi-public institution in the town of Plymouth, Massachusetts. And she had with her, the topic of her speech was how to spot an alcoholic employee on your staff. And what to do if you found one. And she had a little handout, and it was we have the 20 questions, or there's the 44 questions, or you've seen those lists. And so she was handing them out, and I remember getting my copy and the feeling of blushing when I started to read the symptoms and see, and you've probably all had that experience too, like, oh, I don't have that one. I only have that one and that one and that one. Well, I only had about 10 out of the 20. And then it says at the bottom, if you have two or more of these. So I went back to my little table and I sat down next to Roger. And Roger said, when was your last drink? And I don't know why, but I was honest with him, and I said, so at this point it was like about 10 in the morning, and I said, oh, about 6 hours ago. And he says, yeah, it looks it. You know, and here I was, my first day, my new job, my promotion, I had a new dress, I might have even combed my hair that day. And so to make a long story short, he scribbled down the coordinates of an AA meeting that was taking place not that far away that night. And he said, it's a women's meeting. It's kind of a young crowd. It's at Cape Cod Community College. And it's at a convenient time, and it's easy to get to. Why don't you go? You might really get something out of it. And so I took it from him, and then he said, "You know, you're not going to go. I know." Which was a clever ruse, you know. And he tried to grab the little slip of paper from me, and then I got my back up, and he said, "Give me that." So just to show him, I went to that meeting that night. Yeah. And so I went to the meeting, and I was all nervous, and I parked the car, or parked the car, as we say, and went upstairs, and I'm shaking inside. I was just so nervous about this thing. And I went in, it was a big room, maybe half the size of this. And I went, and I sat down in a chair in the back, of course. And my heart is pounding, and I just can't understand anything that's being said. And after about 5 minutes, a guy next to me leans over and he says, "The women's meeting is upstairs." So I had walked into an all-men's meeting, didn't even notice it because of my self-centered fear, what I learned to recognize later as self-centered fear. So then I almost bolted again to the parking lot, but then I said, no, I've got to do it, I've got to do it. So I went upstairs and I went into the women's meeting, and I don't remember anything that was said there either, but I do remember, wow, these are attractive women. And I remembered that the whites of their eyes were white, which had been a goal of mine for a long time, but I had never been able to achieve it. And so before I could get out of that meeting at the end, somebody snagged me and put a big book in my hands. It was both the men's and the women's meetings, as it turned out, were big book step study meetings. And they were rather fundamentalist, and they were very serious about it. I went back several times, and they became a kind of bedrock of my sobriety. But before I could get away, this woman was following me to my car and talking and talking and telling me her whole story, and I thought, oh, this is weird. And yet I was interested, and there was that spark of recognition, that spark of identification. And so before I could get away, she said, "So, I'll meet you tomorrow night at exit 7 on the Mid-Cape Highway at the mobile station, and I'll take you to your next meeting." And she kept doing that to me night after night after night, making a date with me for the following night. And it was probably 2 weeks or more before I had to, and before I had the courage to go to a meeting on my own, and then I did it. So that is how I came to be here. And that was a long time ago. You know when that was? It was the 4th of September, that first meeting, the 4th of September, 1985. And I've heard it said in meetings, how do you stay sober for so long, you know? And the answer is just don't drink and don't die. But if it were just a matter of going to meetings and not drinking, I would have become bored. And the fact is that there's a whole way of life, a whole program for living that, I don't know, I hadn't come across one before. You know, I had been given values, I had been sent to church, I had tried this and that, but I had never come across something that really felt to me like it suited modern life in the time. It was the 20th century. And church was like full of churchy people, but AA was full of drunks and addicts, and they were just way more interesting. And people were doing stuff. We had a meeting here earlier Stephanie, was it, was chairing a meeting about self-honesty this afternoon. It was a really beautiful meeting. And staying sober and developing as a human being in sobriety, because during those famous 12 years when I drank and used, and I was staying 16 years old. I wasn't, I don't know if there's science behind it, but I feel like today, looking at it, my frontal cortex was at a standstill from 16 to 28. So when I came here and I started to practice the steps like those big book thumpers were suggesting, in the inventory, the amends, radical stuff they were asking me to do. And I was doing it because I liked radical stuff. You know, it used to be that I liked to, you know, take a lot of substances and do crazy things, but this, in a way, fit my desire for radical things. The theme this weekend is half measures availed us nothing, because I was not into half measures anymore. You know, I wanted to go for it in some spiritual, psychological sense. And what could be more radical than going up to somebody that you've robbed and say, I robbed you and I want to make it right? Or going to your ex-husband and saying, yeah, I know, what you said is true. I did sleep with all your friends. And I don't have an excuse for it. I was fucked up. I was just a fucked up person. And depending on the person I was making amends to, sometimes I talked about the disease, sometimes I didn't. Sometimes it didn't feel appropriate. Sometimes it felt like more of an excuse than an explanation. But it was the amends, and before that the inventory and sharing it with a sponsor. I cannot overstate the power of doing those actions. There's nothing like it in ordinary life among civilians. You know, and you know it when you see the looks on the faces of the people that you're going to make amends to. So I said that everything about my life today has been formed and shaped by alcohol. I told you, because of alcohol and drugs and everything else, I dropped out of university. Then I went back years later and completed it as an older person. So a lot of the friends I have today are 4 years younger than me. When the time came and I was finally mature enough and healthy enough to consider having a child, I could not have a biological child because of the tortures that I submitted by my reproductive system to as an active drinker. So my daughter is an adoptee. I adopted her when she was a baby, 13 months old, from Russia. And I don't have a formal diagnosis, but I'm quite sure she's got fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. So she's the A center of my life and will be for some time to come. I don't know whether she will ever really be independent. She has her challenges that she was born with. I have mine. We all have them. I believe today that, you know, if I hadn't had that crazy back brace and the things that happened to me, my disease would have found some other reason. My disease would have used some other circumstance to convince me that I needed to medicate this. I needed to medicate it. The fact that I am in Europe, I got sober in Massachusetts And I stayed there for 3 years, and then a relationship came up, and I followed it over to Italy. And so 25 years of my sobriety were spent in Rome, where I was a proud member of Rome English Speaking AA. And if anybody's been there, attended the only conventions I've ever been to are in Rimini, which is where the Italians have their national convention every year. And then I moved to Budapest 5 years ago, where I've been so privileged to see a tiny little fellowship really growing and becoming stronger and more vital. And in fact, there are two other members of the Budapest English-speaking group here tonight. And so, yeah. So for good or for evil, alcohol is like a, you could call it an evil corrosive thread that runs through my existence, or you could just say that it was my higher power's way of bringing me to where I am now. But a way of life second to none. If you're sitting on the fence, if you're new, if you're not sure you want to actually do the steps, maybe you're thinking of just hanging around the fringes of AA, I would highly recommend to dive in, get a sponsor. Don't try to do this on your own. But today I have the ability to reflect and think about who I am, how I am, how I'm doing. Am I going in a good direction? Do I want to correct my course? How could I do things better? Today I get to be here for my life instead of just stumbling through it half numb. Thank you.